to the WIP, the What If podcast that's a work in progress. Of all the podcasts dedicated to Marvel's What If series, we have to be in at least the top five. You know, we are the only show that dares to ask, what if you crossed Swamp Thing, Man Thing, and The Thing? Well, I'm sure you'd get something. Thing. I'm sorry for that terrible joke. I kind of sounded like a guy with a stutter in an echo chamber, which brings up its own set of questions. If a guy got stuck in an echo chamber with a stutter, would he just be caught in some sort of infinite feedback loop? You know? And he'd keep interrupting himself, and yeah, just be stuck there forever. But you know, enough divergence. This is our second episode, and we are going to get into something I'd like to steer the podcast into more, and that is grouping together like ideas slash concepts that were presented throughout the run of the What If series. You know, they take a lot of different takes on some of the same ideas, as we'll see over the course of this podcast. Now, the first one that popped out in my mind was because it was the next issue in line after the last issue we reviewed last time, number 5. This is, what if the Fantastic Four had different powers? And in fact, that's the title of What If Volume 1, number 6. It sums it up very nicely. What if the Fantastic Four had different powers? Oh my god. The cover is similar to Volume 1, number 1, with a lot of red and blues popping against a white background. In the case of number 1, it might have been more of a stylistic choice, whereas here it seems like they just had an empty background because there are a lot of captions and banners just splattered all over the cover, including one that just introduces all of the characters taking on their old versions in the Fantastic Four. So you have Big Brain, who's matched up with Mr. Fantastic, who is a floating brain, possibly with psychic powers. Mandroid, replacing the Human Torch, he's got robot arms, apparently. Ultra Woman, who's stretchy, and that power is even more bizarre on a woman. And it sort of brings up this weird thing that's like Mr. Fantastic. He's Mr. Fantastic, and all he does is stretch. And here's Ultra Woman, and all she does is stretch. It's just a weird juxtaposition of names and such a goofy power. And the Dragonfly, who is the alternate take on Ben Grimm, and he has purple wings. And there's some very clunky dialogue between the Thing and Dragonfly on the cover. It's like, Dragonfly says, like, yeah, there's only gonna be one Ben Grimm. And then the Thing says, yeah, one, cause it's gonna be me, cause you're gonna be killed. Or it's just very bizarre and just dumb. Yeah, looking at the cover, it tells you 80% of what you wanted to know coming into this book. So it's like, okay, here's what their different powers are, here's what they look like, and here they are. The issue itself starts out with a long recap of the Fantastic Four origin, as they are prone to do. I know in the last one, there was a long recap of Spider-Man number 1 for the how he met the Fantastic Four. So the origin of this new Fantastic Four is pretty much the exact same thing, except they have different powers now. It's a very simple swap-out. And it's kind of disturbing because Reed's body has vaporized, and now he's just a psychic brain, who I'm not even sure if he floats. I think he just is just immobile and just is sort of resting there, and they have to pick him up and carry him around. The writer makes the point that these powers are trying to be analogous with their personalities. So Sue, who in one reality is invisible because she sort of disappears behind Reed's overpowering smartness. And here, her pliability makes her Mrs. Fantastic, Ultra Woman, so she stretches. Ben Grimm's a pilot, so obviously he gets wings and can fly. And the Human Torch, Johnny Storm, really likes cars and stuff, so he becomes an actual living robot. I don't know how that makes sense. And Reed Richards is nothing but his brain, so he becomes nothing but his brain. The story of it involves Big Brain losing Sue to Ben because, you know, Ben Grimm's an actual person and is less disgusting with just wings. You know, it sort of brings up a point. What's a angel or archangel so bent about? He's got wings. They're cool. You know, it's not like he has a deformed face or weird skin stuff. He's not gray, as some mutants are prone to be. These guys, they have wings close enough, you know? Just, you got a human face. Just tuck them in. But I digress. So, you know, they go about Big Brain sort of is lamenting losing Sue to Ben, but he sort of goes back into his work. Dr. Doom shows up, steals Mr. Fantastic's brain. In the ensuing battle, Mandroid loses an arm. It shows that he's a living robot, and I don't know what that really means. Does he have actual circuitry? How is this designed? You know, I'd be able to accept that he's made of metal now, but now he's got circuitry and he's an actual living robot. Don't know. But anyway, onto our spoiler section. Big Brain makes Dr. Doom press an explosion button with his psychic powers. After all this, Mandroid inexplicably gets his arm back. I checked. It's really not explained. He just shows up in the background of a panel with arm. And Reed possesses Dr. Doom's body with his psychic mind powers and becomes Dr. Doomtastic. And they resume Fantastic Fouring. So, I mean, the issue's not so bad. It's not a lot to it. They have different powers. They fight some guys in sort of the montage showing that they're still going about their business. And then they have a showdown with Dr. Doom in which Mr. Fantastic gets a body again. There's nothing really emotional or sort of contemplative about it. It's just, if they had different powers, they'd have slightly different adventures. Woo! And our next issue is Volume 1, Issue 36. Ironically, this also has another plain white background for the Fantastic Four. Of course, here again, it seems like it's less of a dramatic pop for the colors as it is just unfinished because there's like some foreground and then just nothing in the background. But this asks, what if the Fantastic Four had no powers? Oh my god! So, on the cover, with its lack of background, Ben and Johnny have guns. Sue has a baseball cap, and Reed is tied up. It's just tremendous. And they're fighting the Mole Man's monster from Fantastic Four, number one. Quick side note, the Fantastic Four portion of this includes a John Byrne story and art, which is a nice little treat. It's always nice to have a name artist in there. They contribute from time to time. This one has a quicker recap of the Fantastic Four origin. In this universe, the divergence is that this mission goes successfully. They don't get struck by cosmic rays. They don't get powers. And in fact, the whole mission goes successfully. So Reed gets a fat government contract and builds a super science complex. Yet, in all of this, he still insists that they wear blue jumpers going around, but with the letter R instead of 4. So they're, what, the Little Richards? Yeah, so after a monster shows up and opens up a hole in the ground, the Little Richards 4 go spelunking, and they fight some rock creatures with guns, and they make their way into the lair of the Mole Man. There's a bunch of creatures from Monster Isle floating around, and they follow a tunnel into Mole Man's lair. It's got some good sci-fi adventure stuff, you know. They're just going down this hole and fighting a bunch of different wacky monsters that have no real purpose for being. You'd wonder how they got there, besides just being quote-unquote monsters. But onto our spoiler alert section, Mole Man blows up Monster Island with a nuclear bomb and the Fantastic Four narrowly escape. So it's sort of a fun little adventure. The moral of the story, as the Watcher puts it succinctly, truly can it be said that it is the man, not the powers, that make the hero. It's trying to show that these guys are heroes even without their powers, that, you know, in across the spread of the multiverse, the cream rise to the top. Dig it. Part of this issue introduces to our podcast another part of the What If series. In that first series, especially, they have a backup story. Sometimes it even splits the issue in half. So for this backup story, it's What If Nova Kept His Powers? Apparently, over the course of his series, he had to give up his powers to come back to Earth at least once. In this universe, he doesn't, so if he hadn't, he would have ran afoul of something called Factor X. And no, they're not more X-Men. It's a Sherlock Holmes robot with a pipe. What's going on? You know, I haven't read the Nova series, so the existence of this Sherlock Holmes robot with his, you know, Sherlock Holmes cap and pipe is just mind-boggling. That's the nefarious villain? Or is it? I'm not even sure what's going on. I read it, and I still don't understand. But anywho, the champions of Xandar, the Nova Powers home planet, they show up to convince Nova to come back or possibly kill him so that the powers are released. I'm not really sure what their endgame is. And the Nova still gives up the Nova power, so I think maybe there's a theme with the first story that it's, the man, not the powers that make the hero. So Richard Rider is doing something heroic by giving up his Nova powers so that Xandar can be protected by some Nova. Overall, the story is pretty blah. He doesn't have his powers, comes back to Earth, some generic super fight, and then he gives up his powers. And the fact that, the end result is still the same, it's sort of blah. Those were two divergences of the Fantastic Four's powers for the first volume. When we come back to our next segment, for the first time in the podcast, we'll discuss the second series of What If. Oh yeah, baby, it's 1990s. Hello and welcome back. We are diving into volume two of the What If series. These are the ones you're gonna see floating around the flea market and quarter bins a lot, especially those first 50 issues. There just seems to be a bunch of those floating around. They're the reason why I got into these What Ifs in the first place. I had a bunch of them as a kid because I just thought they were cool. You get different character redesigns, and it's just sort of wackiness. And it was relaunched in like 1989, maybe. And you just get a bunch of. There's a lot of X-Men and Spider-Man stories in here. But one of them that is an X-Men and Spider-Man is Volume 2, Number 11. What if the Fantastic Four all had the same power? Which to me is a more plausible concept because at least here, four people have the same mutation from these cosmic rays, whatever they are. How come these cosmic rays never seem to show up again to make other people have superpowers? But I digress. The fact that four people have different ridiculous transformations, completely dissimilar from one another, makes it seem even more implausible than comics. But if you think about it too hard, none of this stuff makes sense. Heck, that even applies to real life, but that's an issue for another podcast. So our first page in Volume 2, Number 11, alludes to numbers 1, 6, and 36 from the first series. Oh yeah, baby, I called it. So they allude to all of these other variations of the Fantastic Four, including the Fantastic Five, and the aforementioned different powers and no powers variations on the Fantastic Four. So here we have four mini stories. One for each power. So in the All Human Torch story, they go about, superheroing, and in a battle with a big giant monster, they light a building on fire, which inadvertently kills the daughter of a put-upon waitress from a nearby restaurant. So the Fantastic Four, in their red jumpers, mind you, because, the matching jumpers span realities, they break up, and Ben Grimm joins the Avengers as the Human Torch. It takes an unexpected turn, and I think there's some good characterization in the waitress, especially for such a brief story. It's not bad. For the Mr. Fantastic portion, the very concept of four stretchy people is silly. The fact that DC has Plastic Man and Elastic Man seems ridiculous to me. I mean, obviously, as you see, Marvel Universe limits itself to Mr. Fantastic, and I guess Skin, but I don't think anyone cares about members of Generation X. In our Mr. Fantastic portion, the whole concept is silly, so they pretty much just go their separate ways because they realize they could never be an effective super team as four stretchy guys. Ben and Sue end up together, being normal. Mr. Fantastic just devotes himself to science because he can stretch across the lab better. And the Human Torch becomes an entertainer. Blah. For our Thing portion, now this one seems like it could be a good concept or idea. So they all become monsters of varying degrees, One of them's purple, one of them's, I think, orange, but not the Thing. And then the Thing's the Thing. And Sue Storm, God bless her, becomes the Man-Thing, or perhaps the Woman-Thing. In one of those times when a character is just repurposed, even though it doesn't really have anything to do with anything, it's like, yeah, she's gonna become the man thing in this reality, and she's, barely intelligible, barely intelligent, just. So they quickly head back to Monster Isle. There's not much here, and I think this could have had a lot more. In fact, this could have been a full issue if the basically what if the Fantastic Four's transformation just rendered them all hideous monsters, because in the regular series, only Ben Grimm is a monster, so the other ones can just sort of comfort him. But when there's no one left to turn to, you have like a group of four monsters. It could be kind of cool. But that isn't the case here. It's just sort of very brief, and the ending's very just, oh my god, just end it, and they just go to Monster Isle. For the Invisible Woman section of the story, what if everyone had the same power as the Invisible Woman? Well, it's a misnomer. Oh yeah, they all seem to have variations of her power. Ben can shoot force fields. Johnny can become intangible, which isn't really one of Sue Storm's power. Reed, I think, projects invisibility rather than force fields. And Sue has all of her own powers, I think. And basically, they all become Fantastic Four. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to, you know, jazz it up a little bit. And it's a pretty short story, and they take down Dr. Doom on a mission. Not much to it, sort of blah. There's no, you know, angst or real conflict within the team or anything. Overall, this issue sort of leaves you maybe wanting more, especially from the Thing section. And the Human Torch was good for what it was, but if that was longer, that'd be good too. The Invisible Woman section, just, I don't know, it's very bland. I think if you extended it out, it'd still probably be pretty bland. But, you know, it's 4-quarter stories, so these are all going to be very brief and sort of meh. And on to our next issue, Volume 2, 89. This is from the grim and gritty era of What If, when they just sort of went darker. They didn't really ask a question. It just said, What If starring... And this is What If starring the Fantastic Four. And so if you applied it to like a regular What If title, I guess it would probably be something along the lines of, what if the Fantastic Four were messed up and everyone died? We open up with Reed Richards being convicted of treason, and he also can't unstretch his body. So he has to wear a robot suit to avoid being all floppy. And they thought Sue was dead, but it turns out that she was invisible and sort of became somewhat intangible. And she visits Reed and lets him know that this was all a conspiracy against him, possibly. So Reed meets up with Nick Fury, and they start busting the conspiracy wide open. But in that moment, oh man, big drama. Spoiler. Sue vaporizes completely into nothingness. Maybe. Now granted, this is comic books, so in this universe, she probably came back from the dead in about 6 issues. But I digress. We see that Dr. Doom stole the Human Torch and now tortures him by using him as a power source. A flame on! And he just sucks his energy. So he's like a wood stove, I guess? I don't know. And the Thing is also Dr. Doom's prisoner, and he's all super crusty, like the times when he kept mutating. Which is also another What If issue from the first series, which I might have thrown in here. But you know, there's plenty of time. We got plenty of time to discuss all of these different issues. Reed, who's been captured by Dr. Doom after showing up and being promptly assaulted by Dr. Doom's guards, convinces the Thing to bust out of prison by calling him a coward. By the way, Reed Richards is completely floppy while this is happening because they stole his robot suit. So Ben cradles Reed Richards' floppy body in his arms. And then in the ensuing battle, Human Torch blows himself up and takes out Dr. Doom's castle. Floppy Reed dedicates himself to curing the Thing, and that's pretty much the end of it. They allude to maybe a conspiracy with Bruce Banner and other things, but it's one of those metafiction things where, in this reality, there's probably something up with the Hulk, too. Overall, it's not bad. The story isn't as menacing as the cover implies. Reed Richards looks like a serial killer on the cover, but in here, it's all... he's actually the victim. It's a dark tale, dark take on it, but not super dark, so it's not bad. Worth a read. It's not that long. And, you know, one last piece. Just talking about the Fantastic Four. You know, my first exposure to the Fantastic Four was probably comic books. I mean, I'd buy anything that looks cool. And Fantastic Four are known for, you know, fighting some cool-looking monsters every now and then, traveling to different realities. I know the first Silver Age 12-cent issue I owned was a copy of Fantastic Four. The This Man, This Monster issue, which I always thought was pretty cool, and I still do, and I don't have a lot of Silver Age issues, but that's one of them, and when I look at it, I think that was when I broke through, because I was still pretty young when I got that. But one of my first exposures to the Fantastic Four was the Marvel Action Hour, because I'm of a certain age. So, you know, in our Marvel Action Hour, we got the Iron Man cartoon, which we'll save discussing that for another time, you know, when we do an episode about Iron Man. But suffice to say, it sort of underscores what was going on with the Iron Man movies, and that's that Iron Man has some sparse villains, you know. The Mandarin's pretty cool, but then Whirlwind, Whiplash, Blizzard, these are all, you know, scrubs. And actually, it sort of brings up another point. When I was a kid, I always wished there was like an Avengers cartoon. I don't want to sound, you know, too old man-ish, but kids these days, they got it lucky because they can go on Netflix and they have the Avengers cartoons ready for streaming. Ultimate Spider-Man includes guys like Power Man and Iron Fist. They're getting cartoon love. You know, back in the day, you had like your Spider-Man cartoon and your X-Men cartoon, and then your Marvel Action Hour, which was like, you know, a step below. And the Iron Man cartoon was essentially a West Coast Avengers cartoon at points, which I'm sure everyone was just chomping at the bit for. Some weird looking Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye that talks like this, or however he talked, and it was weird. But you know, I'm getting off on a tangent. The Iron Man cartoon, it's all right. And then the Fantastic Four with their kickin' disco theme song, you know, no need to fear, they're here, just call the four. Look it up on YouTube. I remember episodes with the Puppet Master, the Inhumans, Black Panther, and Claw. Claw, the man made of solid sound, which I never knew what that meant. Does he like emit noise constantly? Like if he walks into a room, it's just like wee. But you know, if you think about it too much, aren't we all made of solid sound in a way? I mean, aren't our molecules held together by atomic vibrations? Wouldn't all the particles in our bodies make noise as they move throughout space? It's just it's imperceptible to us. But you know, that's getting into like quantum physics and a whole nother kit and caboodle that I really shouldn't have gone down this rabbit hole. The Marvel Action Hour, Fantastic Four. I remember the second intro wasn't as awesome because it didn't have the disco theme, though it did have a nice triumphant like Superman sounding theme. But it did bring the famous Fantastic Four covers to life. It wasn't bad, you know. So the Fantastic Four cartoon series covered a lot of ground, I think. You know, I remember the Frightful Four were in there, so they covered a lot of storylines that could have just been glossed over by a cartoon. You know, they could just fight Doctor Doom forever, but they had some different villains. And given the state of their movies, the first one that's, you know, only an urban legend, or you know, they make a documentary about how bad it is or how it was buried, and then the Fox ones, I think it's Fox, the first one, it's okay, it's not bad, it's not good either, it's just, you know, corny. And the second one, I think I've Netflixed it twice and watched it and still can't remember anything from it. They just suffered from a lack of awesomeness. It's just, I don't know if something's missing. So when you think about it, this Marvel Action Hour cartoon, syndicated on Sundays, it might be the best adaptation of the Fantastic Four. Wow. Think about that. That's enough about the Fantastic Four. I'm not quite sure what we'll do for next episode, but you know, there's a lot of what-if issues out there, so I'm sure I'll find something. Take care. By the way, we're available on iTunes and YouTube, but then again, if you're listening to this, you've probably already found it. Yeah, search What If Podcast. I'm on Twitter at The Slim James, or check out my website, theslimjames.com, and subscribe if you want to. Go on iTunes, or search YouTube.